Okay, so this isn't a subject that I'm a specialist in at all, and I'm sure lots of you, particularly the Dutch group at the front, I suspect, will know a lot more about a lot of the details than I do. But I couldn't resist it. Coming from the UK and visiting a country which was notorious for its surveillance before, making a comparison between the two. So I'm John Sturdy, I'm a programmer by trade. I use Linux all the time, basically, and Emacs on top of that. I'm just starting to learn about security technology, so certainly not expert, and as we go through, do shout things out, criticise me, tell me when I've got it completely wrong. But the idea is to give an overview rather than detail, and to give people some thinking points. So, has this stopped receiving? I'm going to... out of range. Oh, it has to actually be on focus. I thought it grabbed it when I put it in presenting mode. Yep, there we go. So, the Albanians here will certainly know, and I guess the other visitors as well, Albania used to be something like North Korea is now. Extremely strict control, savage punishments, and everything watched by a very strict security service. UK is now famous for its CCTV coverage. The rumours you hear about how many cameras there are actually false. What happened was a journalist counted the cameras in one of the streets with the highest number of cameras, measured the length of the street, and took that as the average density for the country. So that's a bit of an overestimate. But we have a lot of them. And it's not just the cameras, there's other things behind them. We're known for our surveillance centre, GCHQ. I do actually know somebody who works there. He otherwise seems quite a reasonable chap. I gather he'd now like to leave, but I'm probably not even allowed to say that. So how do the two compare? So we'll give a bit of background first from my philosophical point of view of it, on it. And that starts with the population being divided into people who are in charge and people who they're in charge of. And if we can get rid of that, we'll probably get rid of most of the surveillance. And I'll suggest the direction to move at the end of the talk. The rulers watch the ruled. We try to watch them back as well. And then governments start treating their people as an enemy because the people want something different from what the government wants. Then the people start to see the government as an enemy. The rulers try to divide and rule, get people to watch each other. That was more the case in Albania than in modern UK. But I heard the figure that one person in three was an informant for the government under Hoxha's regime. And how it all works is that chilling effects, as they're called, stifle dissent, that you don't dare to say things. You don't dare to say what you really mean for fear that you'll get into trouble. And that's how they keep control. So the traditional forms of surveillance, the big one here seems to have been the informers. You didn't know who, even in your own family, was a government informer. So you didn't dare to spread your ideas that the government might not like. Also professional agents, the sigurami here, secret police. But it's not just the secret ones. The other police are very obviously part of the system for controlling you. And there was a lot of secret technical surveillance. And I've already been to House of Leaves, the surveillance centre museum, here twice on this visit, once to help me prepare for this and once to take a group yesterday. I definitely recommend going around that if you haven't. I think it's closed on Mondays, because otherwise it would have been good to include on the post-Oscar tour. Cameras, phone taps, bugs, telephone recorders, things for secretly steaming open letters and looking inside them, things for looking for invisible ink, equivalent of decryption nowadays, I guess. It's all there, and it's all well-developed stuff that's been done for decades. Some of it probably over a century, steaming open letters and so on. Now we've moved on from that, and I thought on seeing a wall of pictures of bugs, microphones concealed in shoes, cameras in coat buttons, things like that, all this has been made obsolete by the Amazon Echo and the mobile phone. You just need to hack into those, things that people voluntarily carry around with them. And that's one thing to bear in mind. It's not just the things the government put there. It's things we choose to do for their benefits. They also have considerable problems they bring with them. So CCTV, you see the cameras everywhere for decades really now, and people have had to watch those manually. Now they're beginning to computerise that. There's face recognition. It seems not to be very good. It can currently be fooled by camouflage makeup. People are experimenting with what sorts of cosmetics they can put on to dazzle the system or give the impression that you're someone else. I've not gone into the detail, but I gather there's particular things it looks like the relative distance between your eyes compared with the height from your eyes to the tip of your nose. There's a few particular ratios that are critical there. Automatic number plate recognition, that's a big thing in the UK. The cameras on the main roads are reading the number plates of all the cars, so you can't drive anywhere without people knowing where you've gone, without the government knowing where you've gone. I mentioned the secret police in Albania. There's some very unsecret police working against protesters in the UK, and there's been a lot of complaint against this, but nothing people have really managed to do. Forward intelligence teams. See, we have Andis here with a big camera. Now, at protests against... Sorry, I'm not meaning to stop you, but at protests, say climate protests in the UK, there will be very obvious uniformed police with big cameras going around photographing the protesters to make sure that people know that if you go to a protest, your face will be recorded and being put into a database. There's also actually a sort of human computing here. There's a few people called super recognisers, a small proportion of the population who have an amazing memory for faces. And if the police spot that ability among any of their staff, they put them into a specialist position where they're just looking at photographs, trying to recognise people. And they'll see somebody who's suspicious a few years ago and still remember them. Travel cards. When you go on the London Underground or any other transport in London, you can have a reusable ticket which you reload. They've actually now gone over to contactless debit cards and credit cards as well. But they made travel using the Oyster card much, much cheaper. I think about a quarter of the price of paying per trip, because they get to see where you go that way, know when it's the same person making the journey. Internet interception, well, that's one of the big things. We all know it's done. We don't know how much it's done. I suspect it's a lot more than they're admitting to. I have my own suspicion that Snowden was actually a plant from the NSA, because for one person to have that much information is a bit suspicious. So I wonder if he was actually working on behalf of the NSA, saying we're doing this much interception to hide the fact that they're actually doing a lot more. He seemed to have too much information for a well-run service to let one person know. Your phones are, of course, tracked by Google, by the government. Even if you turn off the location features, the telephone network will remember which base stations have been talking to your phone, because that's how it routes calls through to you. And nowadays, the Internet of Things, as everything's getting connected up, there's a lot more espionage data available there. Lots of it not particularly useful. The government probably doesn't really care what temperature your home thermostat is set to, but they'll know it anyway. Pretty sure they know all your bank account details and transactions. They're not admitting to it, but they'd be remiss in their duty if the government spies hadn't broken into that. And one very sinister one in the UK, legally compelled key disclosure. You can be jailed for 2 years for refusing to reveal a decryption key. And this has happened to a few people, one of whom had schizophrenia. Probably nothing suspicious in his data, but he felt free to put two fingers up to the government and say, OK, jail me for 2 years. I'm not going to reveal what's in here. He was probably unemployable because of mental illness anyway. So he was looked after in a government prison or secure hospital for 2 years. How does it work? It all really comes down to fear. On the whole, they're not actually going to do anything to you. But if you're a protester, fear of arrest. You know that the policeman stuck his camera in your face last time you went to a protest. They'll know who you are. Fear of blackmail, perhaps, and fear of blacklisting. In the UK's construction industry, there was a company which ran a blacklist saying who was a union activist who had caused any trouble to make sure you couldn't get a job. On the whole, it doesn't actually happen much, but the fear is there. Now, you may disagree. If you've been arrested yourself and got into real trouble, you'll probably say it's not just fear. But I think fear is at the centre of it. So what are they trying to get? On the surface, advantage against other nations. Deterring protest seems to be the main thing. The UK government calls it domestic extremism. It tries to give the people the impression that it's terrorism. This is used, for example, for anti-farming protesters. They'll try to arrest vegans on this basis if they're making protest against the farming industry. Governments, on the whole, like to encourage conformity. I think that's just the way it is with the sort of people who get into government. It's not a deliberate plan in any particular way. It's just the people who go into government like people to be working in large groups. They don't like independent people. It's just not their sort of people. They certainly want to clamp down on social change, even when actually it's to their disadvantage, as many gay politicians will now be able to look back on. They want to keep control. And then one of the ones which is their, one of the reasons they'll give is to detect terrorism and crime. Now, they're not actually at all good at this, as you'll see from various terrorists having actually committed some atrocities. All this watching, well, there might be some they've caught. There's certainly plenty they don't. Punishing whistleblowers, that happens. They, again, mostly via fear. They try to track down journalist sources. That's a big one. And one of the big ones nowadays, particularly with Conservative government in the UK, which likes to privatise everything it can and fairly clearly takes bribes from major companies, is if you do any protest which is to the disadvantage of a company favoured by the government, that really pisses them off. Now, in the UK, that'll be somebody like British Aerospace and the arms companies. They really don't like protests against that. So it's not just the government preserving its own things, it's also preserving large industries, large unpleasant industries. Who can we trust? Clearly not the public sector. They're the ones doing the spying. Private sector? Well, no. Google, Facebook and so on, they're all actually implementing the spying nowadays. If you have a semi-private, something that's partly commercial, partly floss, for example, if you install the open source version of Android on your phone, you might be able to take a bit more control over it, but the data still goes through the networks. So if you want a trustworthy system, yes, it's got to be floss. Now, programmers among you may have read the paper called Trusting Trust. No, it would get horribly technical, and this is an overview. But if you compile a program with a rigged compiler, you're not running the program that you think you've compiled. You can then remove the rigged compiler once you've rigged it to rig the next generation of the compiler. There's nothing visible in the source code. You don't know what you're really running. There are ways around it now. And if you're using an open source encryption system, the maths may have been rigged by American government mathematicians, trying to make suboptimal encryption, which is easier to crack. For example, I believe the NSA tried putting forward certain random number algorithms, which weren't really as random as they looked, because that makes it a bit easier to crack. We could use mesh networks. That really actually belonged on the next slide, somehow it got onto this one. What can we do? Mesh networks come into this. I'll explain what they are in a minute. Even end-to-end encrypted emails, and somebody will be talking about end-to-end encryption later, they'll still have the metadata. They'll know that you've communicated with somebody. They just won't know the content. Steganography. This means hiding data in other data. So, for example, a JPEG file is not pixel for pixel in the bytes of the file. It's actually encoded as the rate of change of the colour. I don't know the full details. I'm not very good at numerical maths. But if you took out one bit of each byte, you might just be blurring the picture a bit. You wouldn't have any very obvious artifacts. so you can hide a small amount of data in a bulk of data. The one I'd like to suggest here, I haven't experimented with it myself, is as you need a lot of low-grade data to hide your data in, a home surveillance camera would be the ideal way to defeat surveillance. Point it at a tree out of the window blowing in the wind, or your fish tank. Nobody's really going to notice some slight glitches in that, and you could use those glitches for your secret messages. It's a bit extreme, but it's hard to prove there's anything there, and if lots of people are watching a popular fish tank, nobody knows which of them is decoding the secret messages arranging the next revolution. You could go off-grid, not use the network at all, and pass USB sticks to each other. I did a thought experiment on this a while ago for keeping open source going if Microsoft started leaning on the ISPs, just as the music industry was, trying to cut down on music being passed around. Could open source actually survive if it was programmers passing USB keys to each other in the pub? Yes, it would. It is workable. It would be a bit different. There might be no master version because you can't communicate so well. You might have local flavours of things. Little very short one. All your transactions are online and in the shops are probably tracked. So use cash. Just piss them off that little bit. They don't know what you're spending it on once you've drawn it from the cash point. You can try being open and unblackmailable. This is actually quite important because if you're trying to arrange social change, you've got to recruit others to your cause. You can't keep it completely secret. You might want to keep your diary secret, but if you're trying to recruit people, you've got to talk to people and you're going to risk one of them being a government agent or somebody who wants to change society in the opposite direction. There's other forms of openness. For example, Norway used to publish everybody's salary and tax for everybody to see. They've now changed it a bit. You have to log into their system, have to be a Norwegian citizen, and people can see who has looked at their salary and tax. So people found that a bit too open in the full open form, but it would be one way around it. Just not fearing, not caring. That kind of breaks down a lot of the things where they're trying to control you by fear and say, OK, arrest me, I'll go to trial, I'll stand for my cause. And again, if you're trying to do major social change, some people are going to have to do that. Obviously, be careful who you vote for. Some of them will support surveillance more than others. Whistleblowing, do it when you have the courage. And start redressing the balance. We'll look at that under surveillance rather than surveillance. And my idea in the long term is that we have to take power from the politicians and move towards direct democracy, where everybody can vote on everything. And there's ways of making this more efficient. It involves the population being more educated than they are at the moment. But in the long run, if there's no division between ruled and rulers, then there's not going to be so much motivation to try to control people. I think it all comes from that division when you push it down to the furthest stage. Surveillance. Surveillance is literally watching from above. Surveillance is watching from underneath. Keep records of what your officials do. If something surprisingly revealing about what the government's up to comes up in a newspaper report, save that page because the government may lean on the newspaper to change the web page. I can't remember the URL, but there's somebody who systematically watches newspapers and the BBC to see when stories get revised. So, for example, with the London Tube bombings, the later reports said they all happened at the same time. The original ones didn't. I don't know which one's true. They've said, obviously, the officially allowed version is that they all happened at the same time. Backup copies, if you've got data of these things, make sure it doesn't disappear. Dead man systems. Now, there's reputed to be one of these set up by Julian Assange, but it's such an obvious thing for him to do. I think people may just be guessing. Something where if you've got some information that you want to reveal at risk to you that you don't yet dare to reveal, but if you were to disappear, you definitely want it to come out. You could have a system which you have to tell every month, hold off, keep this in, And then if it doesn't hear from you for a month, it'll mail it to journalists, put it on the web, release on news groups, whatever. And obviously when you see anybody trying to reduce openness, to keep things under control, draw attention to it. You have to be open about attempts to be closed. Whoops, go back one. And yeah, I think I'm actually on time to leave a few minutes for discussion. I chose a couple of quotes, one which I saw in Bunkart 2 from Enver Hoxha. I then looked through what I could find that Theresa May had said, because I'm pretty sure she would have said the same thing. I couldn't find a quite perfect match, but you read those. The informative service is the observing eye, so that normal and free development of people cannot be blocked by the dark, unpopular forces. Our informative service will not be a suffocating device for people, and so on. Now, this is quite similar to what British politicians have been saying in the latest revision of the surveillance laws. The nearest I could find in a written statement was, all three views made clear that use of investigatory powers is vital to protecting the public. It's all about protecting the public. It's not about controlling them, of course. They all endorsed the current powers available to the police and law enforcement. Actually, they asked for a lot more. As necessary and proportionate. Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? And they agreed that the framework needed updating, which was actually very much in their favour. When your politicians are discussing surveillance, keep an eye on them. So, questions, suggestions, criticisms?
Sure. Yes, you said that the population needs to be more educated for direct democracy. But isn't that the case for a long time already? And does the population need to be more educated than the average population?
Yes, everybody needs to be educated more, I think. And because the politicians like to make out that they're better educated, they can make better decisions, but they are just drawn from the population. And there is a theory, I don't know how good it is because I don't think IQ knowledge is that widespread, but some people say that nobody will vote for a politician more than 30 points more intelligent than them, which with a population average of 100 means you're never going to get any real geniuses into government. You might get a few cunning bastards, but you're not going to get somebody really principled who's really going to think things through. It all comes down to trying to please people while doing what you actually want. No, indeed. Although a lot of prisoners are fairly low IQ, but that may be because they're the ones who get caught, of course. But if the more capable you are, probably the less you have to resort to unethical means to get what you want, I suspect. Well, that as well. It's so many factors, so hard to measure. I probably shouldn't have ventured into that side of it. No, I think we've actually got 5 minutes to spare. Come on, somebody ask more questions, make more suggestions. Andis knows who you are, he's got your photos.
How about we all join the Facebooks and the Google and destroy it from there? Put time bombs in the software and watch office space some more often.
Actually quite hard to do things like that. As with any major change, you need to get a critical mass before the people who will stop you, who want to stop you, are unable to do so, I think. Now, if you make some change in a software system like that, because software is reviewed in pretty much any development organisation, somebody will catch it. You need a fair number of people who will pass that as an improvement. You can't start off on a small scale. And I think that's part of how repression works. That you've got to organise enough resistance that before that it reaches a size that's hard to resist, before the people who are opposed to it realise that they've got to do something. And were I to understand statistics and social science enough, that would be a fascinating area to research. how you can start the seeds of a change in such a way that they don't get caught and stomped on, but start growing subtly and then suddenly reveal. There is a book called Coup d'État, a practical handbook, but that I think is aimed more at African countries and is very much about the civil service taking over from the government. But it would be nice to have some more manuals on how to change things.
You were mentioning direct democracy. We have it in Switzerland, and I don't think that's a big help concerning surveillance. Also, in a direct democracy, you have a lot of surveillance, you have police, you have anti-terrorism, and so, and they excuse a lot. Maybe they don't save as much as data as in other countries, or not for such a long time. But also in Switzerland, they try to get the number plates of cars and everything. So I don't think that this is really the solution for that problem.
Yes, what I was thinking of there was the entire governmental system moving over to direct democracy. So I believe the Swiss system acts as a bit of a check against the politicians, that if they go too far from what the population wants, they can then be checked more easily than in other countries. The system I have in mind is one called liquid democracy, where everything is done by popular vote, but because that's too much work for everybody, you can proxy your vote quite possibly to organisations with particular interests. So you might proxy your vote on many areas to Friends of the Earth and to other such organisations. But you can take your proxy back instantaneously. And the typical suggestion is to do it in two phases, 2 weeks apart. So the vote is announced, the proxies all vote and say which way they voted, but that's not binding. You then get a chance to remove your proxy, either permanently or just for that issue, for the binding vote. So, but everything is done by issues rather than by parties. I like the idea that political parties should be banned, that everybody should vote on the actual issues, but we're a long way from being able to move towards that, well, to move to that yet. But any moves in that direction, I think, would be a step forward.
Wouldn't that make propaganda the biggest win, because you're actually not able to be that well educated about every subject every current politician now votes on? So you only have to believe what the propaganda writes, and so it might be very way easier for the big news media and for things like Google and Facebook to gain power in such an environment. So aren't you promoting it the wrong way?
Possibly. This is why I'm opening it to the audience for suggestions. But when I say that the population needs to be more educated, that's one of the most important parts of education, to disbelieve the media and to think for yourself. But you know, maybe some of the people just aren't going to be good at that. But still, I reckon that the problem of half the population being in the bottom half of the ability of the decision-making range is actually a smaller problem than separating some people out to be the politicians. But that's just an opinion. Okay, I think I'll finish there with time for the next talk.